Hello,
Hello.
welcome everyone to Who's Funding This Podcast.
To who's funding this podcast?
I'm your host, Doug Terranova.
And I'm your hype guy, Maddie Bird.
Oh, you are though. Yeah, you're 100%. I think we're each other's hype guy.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. But I like to be in the back. Like, if you were to get into a fight with somebody, I would be there with my arms crossed. Like, whatever they said.
That's no, that's absolutely if I needed to if I like Maddie, I need you to just be on board with whatever I'm gonna say, you'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah.
Just repeat it.
just yeah, with a lot of emphasis.
Emphasis. Exactly.
Well, we are a conspiracy theory podcast put on by two increasingly less skeptical comedians.
Yeah, something about this podcast is changing our brain chemistry.
And that's the thing. It's like I'm still pretty cynical. You know, listen to our last episode,
Yes.
where I that's if, listen, if you want proof that I'm not gonna 100% believe something, or even 1% believe some things,
Listen to
it's
our
our
last
last
episode. If you
episode.
want proof that I'm losing touch with reality, slowly but surely, also listen to the last episode.
But that's the thing though, is we've talked about this before, is
Yeah.
everybody gets one crazy conspiracy theory
That
that
you
they
just get to
believe.
believe, no questions
Yeah.
asked.
And yours is that King Charles is definitely a vampire.
Vampire, yeah.
I still haven't found mine. Like, okay, the thing is, our subject today,
It might be getting
but
you a
yeah,
little
but
bit.
I wouldn't say that it's a crazy conspiracy theory, which is probably what crazy conspiracy theorists say about their crazy
Crazy
conspiracy
conspiracy theories.
theories.
Okay, but we've gone into we've kind of started going into these episodes a little bit blind, I think. And so I don't really know anything about what we're talking today other than it has some measurable believability to it.
Yeah, so and we've been like we haven't really talked much about this, but in the past when we were talking about episodes to do, we've colloquially called this the Murder Pope episode.
Yes.
But that's, yeah, we're talking today about the very suspicious death of Pope John Paul I, who died in 1978, 33 days into his papacy.
I think papalcy.
Papacy, the popification. Yeah, 33 days after his popification,
That's fantastic. I love that.
So I feel like I already know the answer to this, but do you have any sort of attachment or like do you have any sort of connection knowledge-wise with this story at all?
Okay, believe it or not, I don't.
Okay. I was about to say you do? 'Cause, yeah. No,
No.
that's, I mean, this happened in the 70s. Neither one of us were alive. My brother was alive. He was a year old when this happened.
You go.
Yeah, he's old.
He's old. I don't have any connection to this. I have almost no knowledge of any popifications. So this is very much a learning experience for me, this one.
I will say, okay. I again going back to like we all get one crazy conspiracy theory. I still don't have one, but I will say that entering into my orbit are more and more Catholic conspiracy theories. Like researching this, there was this whole other one about this missing girl from Vatican City, and then there's this whole other thing that I eventually want to do about whether or not there was secretly a female pope one time.
Yeah.
Like there's, I feel like it's an institution that lends itself to conspiracy theory because it is literally all over the globe. It's very secretive, and has known very like it's very shady things
That have
happened.
happened. Yeah,
Yeah.
listen, they communicate to the public with colored smoke, and it's 2024, and they still do that.
Yeah, not even fun colored smoke. It's just white and black.
We and it's like some thumbs up or thumbs down.
It's
We did it or we didn't.
yeah, they could. We have the technology. They could do pink, blue, green.
They could
They
put
could do a gender reveal for the Pope, is what I'm saying.
they could do drones that like fly around with colors. Like, it could be so cool, but it's like it's shrouded in this mystique.
Mm. Now you weren't raised Catholic, were you?
No, I was not raised Catholic.
Same. I was not. And I will say, okay, going into that, that's a good disclaimer. We have clearly, if you have listened to even the 5 minutes of this podcast episode, we have very differing views from the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And that's probably going to come into play. So if that is not your bag, just put us on mute. Please keep playing it. But that's...
I feel like that is a good compromise.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll try not to bag on the Catholic Church too much, but no promises.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess you want to, should we just jump into it?
I think we should just jump into it.
Okay, well, let's start. I'm going to be jumping a little back and forth, but for the background, I'll just kind of go through his life.
Okay.
And then we'll just see what happens. So Pope John Paul I was born Albino Luciani.
Okay.
He was born in northern Italy. And he was actually, so he's baptized on the day he was born by a midwife, which is not like the traditional Catholic thing. But apparently he was a very like difficult birth, and he was like immediately very sick. So she believed he was in danger of death. So of course, the right thing to do first is baptize him.
Right. Of course. So far, I'm following all the logic.
Uh-huh. It was 1912 that he was born.
Oh.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
Helps. Yeah, and then he was formally baptized a couple days later at his local parish church. So he grew up, obviously, in the church. His mom was very Catholic. His father actually was an atheist and socialist.
Interesting.
Yeah, and his father was actually a bricklayer that would like go all around Europe doing freelance brickification. Yeah, the brickification of Europe. That's actually, it's really interesting because as he went through Europe, he became very much a socialist. The dad. Mm-hmm. And I think that you kind of see that a little bit in the way Albino like worked in his faith as he got older.
I feel like this is going to come into play later.
Sort of. Okay. I will say there are more conspiracy theories about this than we will be covering today.
Okay.
And definitely some of those, yes. But not the one. We are covering literally one.
Got it.
So in 1922, when he was 10 years old, a traveling Franciscan friar came. Say that five times fast. Traveling Franciscan friar. came to town to preach the Lenten sermons, and Albino was just awestruck by this man.
Uh-huh.
In a heterosexual way. And,
to be clear, they were 5 feet apart. Yeah, they're not gay.
And from that moment on, Albino was like, I want to be a priest. I'm called to be a priest.
Okay.
Because in religion, you can't ever just want something. God has to want it also.
Right.
So God wanted him to be a priest. And so his mom actually was thrilled with this. His dad, not so much. But his mom was like, okay, so what you should do then is go attend what's called a minor seminary, which is a type of like boarding school for boys that want to become priests.
Mm-hmm.
Now this might be apocryphal, but allegedly, so he had to get his atheist dad's approval first,
mm-hmm.
and he was worried that wasn't going to happen, but his dad wrote a letter back because, you know, he's off brickifying.
Right.
Yeah. And his dad wrote back and was like, I give you permission as long as you promise to always be on the side of the worker.
Okay. Cute. I like it. Yeah. Fine. What's wrong with that?
Love that. Yeah. Because socialism's bad, Maddie. How dare you?
My radical ideas.
How fucking dare you? So he went to this minor seminary, and he was ordained a priest in July of 1935 at the age of 23. He worked his way through a doctorate of sacred theology, which I don't know.
It's that, yeah. And you do that at like Catholic school? Like religion school?
Religion school, a Catholic university.
Okay.
Yeah. So he became a priest and then kind of worked his way up the ladder of the Catholic Church, and in 1958 became a bishop. Which it's like, I don't know.
There's a hierarchy.
Yeah, there's a hierarchy.
To popification.
Yeah, so there's priests, bishops, different kind of better bishops, which we'll get into actually, cardinal, pope.
Okay, I've heard of cardinals before because I watched the movie Da Vinci.
The Da Vinci Code?
The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. That's in Angels and Demons had a lot to do with, I don't know. Dan Brown can only write one story. and it's like this professor who is just super genius and also can pull all these hot women all the time is the only one who can look at, I don't know, fucking art and figure out secrets.
It's truly like just the most like, if, I feel like it's just like a main character syndrome, but like literally is the main character. Like, well,
when I worked at, so I worked at Walden Books back in the day, RIP. And I read the Da Vinci Code because I was like, I want to see what all the fuss is about because everyone, big man.
Yeah.
And then I read Angels and Demons and I was like, okay, same story, but different.
Yeah.
And then there was, I think, The Lost Symbol. And I was like, same story, but the same. And then there was another one that was set in Florence. And I was like, all right, Dan.
We're going to have to change something.
This is the fourth time I've read this.
Yeah.
Like, I... but, there, I mean, it's like junk food for your brain. Like, it's, I mean, it's a fun read. I won't say it's not. But anyways, that's, what we're talking about today.
For the, this concludes the book, book review.
Book review. Dan Brown, please write a news story.
And promote our podcast. Thanks.
Yes. Was that a flattering thing for you, Dan?
Because you could fund this podcast.
You could fund. I know you could. It does not cost very much. Nothing
well,
right
you
now.
Don't tell how much it costs. We don't
by
know.
By not very much, I mean like $1 million?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. so anyways.
We're on track to ascend to popification.
They say Pope Francis is too liberal of a pope. You just wait. Gay popes. but anyways, so yeah, he became a bishop. And as a bishop, Albino attended the Second Vatican Council. And so here's the thing in Catholic history. And I feel like so much of this episode requires context. Hold on one second, actually. My screen setup is not ideal. Okay.
Thank you for coffee.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so, yeah, Catholic history. Blah, blah. The Second Vatican Council was like this huge moment in modern Catholicism. There's only been two. The first one,
okay,
like when the church was established,
okay,
long time ago, and this one was because the Catholic Church was quickly losing touch with the modern world, and so it was a big deal. It lasted, I think, the better part of a year or 2 years. 3 years, from 1962 to 1965. While he was there, Albino worked to make it as transparent to the church as possible because he believed that that was a big part of modernizing is transparency. Mm-hmm. And he published open letters on all the council meetings in those 3 years.
I am a fan of
Albino. I will say, okay, and I'm going to go into some things that, like, he still was Catholic. Overall, especially given the time, pretty good guy.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we're gonna say that if anybody should be transparent, perhaps the Catholic Church.
They certainly could benefit from it because it's kind of the same like when we talked about Princess Diana, like how it's like the English government went out of their way to obfuscate and look fucking guilty.
Yes.
Catholic Church does that.
Just constantly.
They They go out of their way to make themselves look suspicious as fuck.
And then also are bad.
Yeah, yeah. And they, oh yeah, they also, yes, turns out.
And they also commit crimes.
So, that 1962-1965, I also, it's worth noting, and I probably have this later on in my notes, but we'll say it now. He, as a bishop, believes very much in the Franciscan way, probably influenced from, like, early on, which is, you, as a leader of the church, should not have valuables. You should be taking your possessions and you should be selling them and spending that money on the poor. And he actually did that. When he kind of went to the next level, which we'll talk about in a second, of his like journey, Pope John the 22nd, mm-hmm. Who was the Pope at that time, visited him, gave him this like beautiful gold cross, which he promptly sold, and then used that money to help disabled children in his diocese.
I know that he's Catholic, but I'm starting to be a fan.
Yeah, yeah, truly. And he also encouraged the priest under him to do the same thing, like sell your valuables and do this. Yeah, so he's
like actually live by mm-hmm. the credence that mm-hmm. and kindness that Catholicism is supposed to.
And I think that that's where you see his dad's influence is, mm-hmm. you know, his dad was like, always be on the side of the little guy.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to be involved in the church, you need to be helping out the poor. You need to be helping out the workers and stuff like that. And I think you can see that for sure. So in 1969, the Patriarch of Venice died. And now Patriarch is like that next step up for bishops. It's like you're getting promoted from store manager to like regional manager.
Okay, so yeah. It's priest, mm-hmm. bishop,
patriarch,
mm-hmm. and then cardinal?
Cardinal.
Okay.
That's how I understand it.
And they get, the robes get fancier and fancier.
Yeah, I think you get cool stoles, you know? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Better dry cleaning.
I think it's, what's funny to think about is that because I know so little about it, and I know what a priest's robes look like, and mm-hmm. I know what the stoles look like, but mm-hmm. in my brain, I'm honestly just thinking about the different levels of stormtroopers.
It's the same, yeah.
And that's what they are to me.
It's the same. It's exactly the same. So the Patriarch of Venice died in 1969, and at that time, so Pope John the 22nd had died, and it's Pope Paul the 6th. Lots of names. It's okay to not remember them. We're going to have so many names in this episode.
Okay, because we've already had 22 Johns.
Yeah.
This is the 22nd John.
He died. Yeah, it's actually, before that, only 22 Johns in history. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Keep the pause in. That took me so long to get the joke.
Listen, it's also worth noting we both had a late night last night.
I'm going to take a sip of my coffee so that I can follow along with our own humor. That was a good joke. I liked it. 10 out of 10.
So Pope Paul VI in 1969, after the Patriarch of Venice died, called on Albino to replace him. The Patriarch of Venice is over 9 dioceses in northern Italy. So he's over 9 bishops, basically. In 1971, he was personally invited to the Synod of Bishops by Pope Paul VI. Don't know what that is. I can only know so many Catholic terms.
I feel like I should be taking notes.
Yeah. But while he was there, it's, I guess, like, I think Synod is like a synonym for like meeting.
Okay.
He proposed the idea that the diocese in countries that were heavily industrialized, so like developed nations, should give up to 1% of their earnings and send those to dioceses in third world countries to be used for community service.
Okay.
Again, like this whole background is like, look how good of a guy he is.
Yeah.
And he was quoted saying that that is not as alms, but something that is owed. It's owed to compensate for the injustices that our consumer-oriented world is committing towards the world on the way to development, and in some way to make reparation for social sin of which we must become aware.
I love it.
Yeah.
I don't, I, I, would add that the Catholic Church played a role in some of, in a lot of that.
In a lot of it.
In a lot of that.
In a lot of it, yeah.
So I would add just a little asterisk note at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Reparations for also all of the shit that the Catholic Church specifically has done. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. This happened before we were born. So yeah. I wasn't there to counsel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would say I'm on board.
Yeah. For him to say that it's not charity, but it's actually a way of us compensating for the injustices that our world is committing towards developing nations. I imagine that was astonishing in 1971.
I bet so.
Yeah. So we're going to jump forward to August 6, 1978. Pope Paul VI died.
Okay.
And like right after the conclave happened, which is where the College of Cardinals get together to meet and vote on new pope.
There has to just be like one book that is a dictionary of all of these fucking terms.
Yeah.
College of, what's a College of Cardinals?
The college, it's just the Cardinals. It's like just, it's what together. They call the collection of Cardinals.
Got
so
it.
All of the Cardinals.
So like a family of lions is a pride.
Yeah.
And a collection of Cardinals is a college.
Got yeah. it. Yeah. As long as it's all of them. Yeah. It's an all or nothing thing with that term. So all of the Cardinals get together to vote and it's called conclave. I know.
Okay.
It gets the we're almost at the end of Catholic terms, but don't worry, we're going to replace it with a lot of people's names and institution names.
Okay, cool.
So this
it's
is,
okay. I'm smart enough to do this.
I'm not going to lie to you. This is a dense episode.
Yeah.
And that's why we're only covering one conspiracy theory.
Yeah, because there's a lot of context that we're going through. That mm-hmm. makes sense. But like I said, a learning experience for me, and
yeah,
I'm happy
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, didn't you want to know more about the Catholic Church?
You know, I wouldn't have said those words exactly.
Aren't you just excited to know the inner workings of the Catholic Church? So kind of like how the conclave works is cardinals can't campaign for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be nominated by other cardinals. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of politicking that happens behind closed doors, but they do four rounds of voting, I think, and at the end, like, the fourth one is what matters. So,
okay.
like, 1 through 3, it's just, like, putting ideas out there, names out there. So after the fourth round, it's, like, 90 out of 110 votes were for Albino Luciani. They said that he is someone who could like unite the different like conservative and liberal factions of the church. That he was someone that could be friends to everyone, pretty well loved. He was known for being friendly and engaging. So it just seemed like a good choice. There was another front runner, but he was only like late 50s. So they said he was too young,
right,
to be pope.
That sounds right. For all institutions across the world,
mm-hmm.
you must be as old as fucking possible to make decisions for other people.
Now, here's what's interesting. Luciani did not want to be pope.
Interesting.
He had originally said, if you elect me pope, I'm going to refuse it.
Did he say why?
No, but we're going to get into why.
Okay.
He did end up accepting it. And then when asked if he would accept, he hesitated and then said, may God forgive you for what you've done on my behalf. Drama. Just dramatic.
What does that mean?
Yeah, right? So he, like, from the get-go, wanted his papacy, popification, to be different. So usually there's a coronation where you're crowned pope.
Mm-hmm.
He instead insisted on an inauguration, much like just like a presidential inauguration, and he was not crowned. He also refused to be carried around in the pope chair,
mm-hmm.
which is a thing, I guess.
I've seen pictures of the pope chair, I believe.
Yeah, and I guess they don't use it anymore. And he also was the first modern pope to speak in the singular I instead of we,
okay,
like the royal we. So we have been saying like, here's all the good things about Pope John Paul I. I will say he was still, like I said, Catholic.
Right.
He was anti-choice, anti-divorce, anti-LGBT. He didn't believe women should be priests. So, I mean, he's still, and I think that that, like, partnered with his, like, I want to actually help people is probably why they're like, you are a good moderate choice to bridge, like, conservative and liberal factions.
Yeah. So it was basically like, we'll help poor people, but only if women continue to be property.
Yeah. And also if they're not gay, I guess.
Yeah. And also no gay.
Yeah. So, you know, so he was nicknamed the Smiling Pope because he was generally good natured, very friendly, blah, blah, blah. However, September 29th, 33 days into his popeness, he died. At his, like, normal morning routine is a nun would leave coffee outside of his room at, like, 5 a.m., and, like, several hours had passed, and they noticed he still hadn't come out to get his coffee. So the nun went in to check on him, and he was dead in his bed. He was, like, propped up, had a book in his lap, and, like, just apparently had a very serene look on his face.
And he just died.
But he'd be dead.
Okay.
It looked very peaceful. And the official cause of death, which was given by a Vatican doctor, was a heart attack that happened at 11 p.m. the night before.
Okay.
Which I personally think is suspicious because it wouldn't be serene, right? You wouldn't just be like, let me put this book down while I have this massive heart attack. Smile, smile, smile.
Smile, smile. All right. I wonder too, like, I didn't know that you could tell the time of a heart attack.
Well, so here's what's interesting is, well, I guess that you can, like, without a lot of examination, kind of give a time of death.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you've been dead for X amount of time.
Okay. I see.
But what's interesting is, so Vatican law says that no autopsy can be performed on popes.
Okay.
Because it's desecrating the Pope to do that.
Okay.
So he was not given an autopsy and he was embalmed and put into, like, Pope cemetery.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. So
in the catacombs underneath.
Yeah. And so that is the background.
Okay.
Just very quick, like, life of and death of Pope John Paul I. And that is going to get us into our one and only conspiracy theory today. That Pope John Paul I was poisoned because he was investigating corruption involving the Vatican's finances. Mm. And this is a conspiracy that involves the Vatican Bank. It involves mafia. It involves Freemasons.
It's everybody.
Yeah. So it's like this huge thing. And that's why this is such a dense episode, is there's a lot going on. So to really get to this conspiracy, we have to go back to before he became Pope, when he was the Patriarch of Venice.
Okay.
Okay. The nine dioceses in northern Italy that he was Patriarch over relied on this Catholic bank called Veneto.
Okay.
Veneto was even nicknamed, like, the priest bank because it would do the diocese so many favors in helping out with their charity work and whatnot. It was very important to the bank, to the diocese of northern Italy, and was close to the Vatican's personal bank, which is the Institute for the Works of Religion, or as it's colloquially known, and the only thing I will call it from now on, the Vatican Bank.
The Vatican Bank. Okay.
Way easier. Now, the Vatican Bank held majority shares in Veneto. Which is probably why it was so fucking helpful to the church. But that's neither here nor there. So in mid-1972, about a year into him, Albino being the Patriarch of Venice, the man in charge of the Vatican Bank, an American bishop named Paul Marcinkus, sold the majority shares of Veneto to someone outside the church and who was not a friend of the church, whose name was Roberto Calvi.
Okay.
Now, it's important to note that a lot of the, like, pretty much everything I'm about to say, and I'll let you know when it stops, is actual fact.
Okay.
Like, a thing that happened.
Okay.
Okay. So, Roberto Calvi was an Italian mogul and the general manager of Italy's biggest private bank, Banco Umbriano.
Okay.
So, with the majority shares of Veneto that he purchased, being in the hands of Roberto Calvi, who is, you know, not incentivized to help priests like the Vatican Bank is, the Diocese of Northern Italy would basically be at his whim, and that was obviously very concerning to the bishops
right.
of the area and the priests. And so they brought their concerns to their patriarch, Albino Luciani. They wanted Albino to go to Pope Paul VI and ask for Marcinkus to be removed from the head of the Vatican Bank. Because they were like, he is obviously not operating in our interest.
Mm-hmm.
Something else is going on. We think that there's corruption. And so Luciano was like, okay, I'm going to look into this matter. I can't just go and be like, kick him out. You know, I'm going to look into it. And if I notice anything kind of screwy, I will go to the Pope. Because that's what you do, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that Albino found, though, was that Pope Paul the Sixth, is it the Sixth? It might be the 11th.
But it was one of the Pauls.
Pope Paul, hold on. I feel like I need to know now. it doesn't matter. The Pope. But it was the Sixth. Okay. I put 11th in my notes, but it's the 6th.
Got it. Okay.
Cool.
I don't have it, just so we're aware. I got it. I mean, yeah. Whatever you say.
Yeah. Yep. Pope Paul VI, the first thing he found out that was that Pope Paul VI was very good friends with Marcinkus. And Marcinkus apparently had saved the Pope from a knife attack in the Philippines years before.
Okay.
Which is...
So now we have a blood debt.
Fucking weird. Like, what a fucking weird, not that that happened, but it's just, like, random?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what's happening in the Philippines with the Pope? I imagine it's very, like, you know, they're just, like, in the jungle together, like,
yeah.
Going.
Well, but I feel like the Pope is, like, often, like, a target, right? Like, doesn't the Pope, like, drive around in, like, a glass case
yeah, it's like
all
a
of the time?
Bulletproof.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe, yeah, with the Pope Mobile.
The Pope Mobile.
Which is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. It's a car that's been popified.
It's a popified car. Is that car getting into heaven? That's what I want to know.
Only if it hasn't committed any sins.
It did run over a kid one time.
Oh my God.
But it was probably the kid's fault. No, that's okay. Listen, everybody, that's not true. I don't think that's ever happened, but that's. this is how conspiracy theories start.
Because I fully believed it. I was like, wait, what?
So he was like, shit. So if Pope Paul the Sixth and or 11th is very good friends with this guy who is possibly doing this corruption, I need some solid fucking evidence. I cannot just go to the Pope. And like, even there's some thoughts of like, does the Pope know? And okay, so I want to take a break and talk about why there might be corruption happening. So I had to talk to Bobby about this. Bobby knows money things better than me. I was like, okay, I'm going to give you all the facts. And you tell me how you think corruption can happen. But basically, so when Marcinkus had the Vatican Bank sell off the majority shares of Veneto to Roberto Calvi, he also bought shares of Roberto Calvi's bank and got put on the board of overseas operations of Banco Umbriano.
Okay.
And so it's kind of like a tit for tat thing, and it's believed that so the majority shares of Veneto sold for $45 million. And it's believed that not all of that went back to the Vatican Bank.
Mm.
Like some of that Marcinkus kept for himself. So illegal things. And there's more alleged illegal things, but that's a thing that definitely happened.
Okay.
Yeah. That's, there's like, whole investigations came out and were like, okay, this is actually what happened. And there's some other things too that actually came out that we're going to get into. But I feel like that was a good stopping point to be like, this is why the bishops were freaked out.
Yeah.
Not only was it sold to this man who has no love for the Catholic Church, but also we're pretty sure that something illegal happened in the process.
In the transaction. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So Albino started digging and he started hearing rumors that the whole cell itself of the Veneto shares were part of a scheme cooked up by Roberto Calvi and Paul Marcinkus to make money, which honestly is probably, yeah, that's...
People do that.
You're doing this for money. Roberto Calvi, obviously doing this for money.
Yeah.
Marcinkus is supposed to be doing it for God or something, I guess, but I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe God is money.
Yeah, maybe. So basically they were using the Vatican funds to make themselves richer.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are things we know. There were also rumors, now this had never been proven, that Pope Paul VI was also in on the scheme. So Albino, once he kind of heard these rumors, believed that he was virtually unable to do anything about any corruption with the Vatican Bank. Like, you can go to the head honcho and, like, but if he's in on it...
He's not going to stop it.
Yeah, exactly. A year or so later, Albino was named cardinal. While he was cardinal, he heard more rumors involving Bishop Marcinkus, and that's when he heard that this actual thing, again, that happened. And I keep stressing that because we talk about a lot of conspiracy theories that are like, this could have happened and this could have happened.
Yeah.
Right now, we're still in the realm of these are the things that really did happen.
Okay. Okay.
And there's reports, there's evidence, it's real. So back in the United States, the FBI officials who like investigated organized crime, raided Bishop Marcinkus's office. Because they were investigating $14.5 million of counterfeit U.S. bonds that had passed through that office, started with the mafia in New York, who made the counterfeit bonds, passed through that office, and they believed went to the Vatican.
Okay, so this is our mafia connection.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's how the mafia gets involved. They believed that Marcinkus was involved in not only passing these bonds, through, like, to the Vatican, but in making them. But due to the secrecy of the goddamn Catholic Church and how they kind of will immediately circle their wagons, and they were never able to prove anything.
Gotcha.
So
excessive secrecy. All over again.
Chaos and excessive secrecy. Yep. That's my favorite term that we have come across so far, honestly. Chaos and excessive secrecy. So that was... 1973, I believe. And so for 5 years, nothing happened with this. Now Cardinal Albino Luciani was like, I can't do anything. My hands are tied. There's not enough proof. But 5 years later, Pope Paul VI died, and Albino became Pope Paul the First. You know Pope Paul the First.
Yeah, I know that. I misspoke earlier when I said I hadn't heard anything. This one I think is common knowledge. Yeah.
So let's take a break there and digest.
Okay. So can I repeat back to you?
Yes.
Okay. Because you said you did say a lot of names. Like, and you said that you would. So I'm just trying to keep it straight. Okay. So Albino lives his life. He ascends the hierarchy of popification. So he becomes a bishop. Nothing really of note there. He becomes a patriarch. This is when he starts to hear about... So at the same time that he's a patriarch is when the American pope starts doing shady shit with money and selling things off.
Not the American pope. There's no American. American bishop.
The American bishop. Yes. Yes. Right.
America has its own pope. We would, though.
And it's Beyonce.
It's Beyonce.
So, okay. So there is an American bishop, and he sells shares to a guy named Roberto, who has no ties to the church pretty much whatsoever, other than he saved Pope Paul the Sixth.
Marcinkus saved Pope Paul the Sixth.
Okay, so so Marcinkus, who is the bishop, saved the Pope at one point.
In the Philippines.
In the Philippines, yeah, from getting stabbed.
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't the guy.
No, it was this other guy. The only affiliation he has with the church at all is through Marcinkus. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And so what do we know about Roberto, the guy who he is part of another bank in Italy.
The general manager of the largest private bank in Italy.
Okay.
Banco Umbriano.
So then they do a shady trade. So there was it was a tit for tat situation. And then we're not sure if the Pope at the time had any awareness of it, but potentially yes, because
Yeah.
He was buddy buddy with Marcinkus.
Now, also Marcinkus is getting into some hot water in America because the FBI was following these counterfeit bonds that passed through his office, but they were never able to make anything stick on him.
Okay, so nothing sticks on Marcinkus, but we have multiple accounts of like money things that are. You can definitely not
start to see it from multiple sides. Like from the Catholic Church side, they're like, you know, these people in Northern Italy are like, I really believe Marcinkus is using Vatican funds for corrupt reasons and is also doing things that are not in the best interest of the Catholic Church. On the American side, like we have these counterfeit bonds that starting from the mafia that we have good reason to believe passed through his office, but the church is too secretive, we can't make it stick.
So I suppose in this time, because Albino never actually is able to like formally do anything. So was there any is there any event or any like recourse for the selling of like these bonds? Like, did it dry out the funds that the bishops needed in Northern Italy?
No. So the thing is, there was no recourse, no consequences, other than likely it made Bishop Marcinkus even richer.
Okay.
And maybe probably went to his buddies because he got very buddy buddy with Roberto Calvi. They apparently even went on vacations together to the Bahamas.
That's homosexual.
It's very gay.
Yeah.
Like, that was when I was doing the research. Like, they developed an intense friendship. I was like, gay? And I was like, they even went on vacations together. I was like, gay.
That's gay.
Just let me like slam the mic into my fist. That's fine. Do you can you think of an instance that you would go, let's imagine you're not married. And you're just palling around with your best gal pal in the whole world, and you're like, I know, let's go to the Bahamas together.
Like,
And
that's not gay? Is it okay, we need our hetero friends to really weigh in here. Maybe we're skewed.
Maybe we're too gay.
By our own homosexuality.
to see this.
The words intense friendship and Bahamas really do make me feel.
If you're going to a tropical location together, just the two of you.
Yeah. That's a little romantic.
It's romantic. Yeah. I can't imagine, like, I just can't imagine pitching that even.
Right. Because I've gone on, like, I've done road trips and stuff with, like, my best friend, and like we went to Colorado, and like we, you know, hung out.
And very similar, my good friend Carla and I, we went on a road trip to Colorado. Yeah, and that was, it's just two of us, it was fine.
But I didn't, I'm gonna say.
That's the real conspiracy.
You see, because I was about to rate it. I'm about to say 7 out of 10. They were money hungry. Yes.
You know what I love is that when I was putting this episode together, I was like kind of sad that there's not going to be a lot of chance to rate things, and that you just were like, I'm going to make my own path. Like, we're gonna rate this. They're gay. I would say, are Marcinkus and Calvi gay together? Yeah. 10 out of 10. They're gay.
I'm going to start doing a homosexuality scale every episode.
Yes, but can you do it from, like, not numbers? Like, can you do, like, makeup like weird markers. Like,
oh, yeah. Okay. So they, yeah, and I can do it with this one too. Mm-hmm. So they are Eleanor Roosevelt and Amelia Earhart out of 10 gay.
Okay. I'm going to try to make it even less numerical.
Okay.
Are you ready? So on a scale of a drunk makeout with your good buddy to married to someone of the same gender, I'm going to give their relationship late night blowjob because you couldn't get any at the club.
I think it's more than that.
Okay.
I think it's
okay.
More than that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'll say. On that same scale, I think it is intense friendship vacations to the Bahamas.
Yes. Yeah, agreed. And, you know, a lot of gay men, especially in the 20th century, whenever, you know, no rights, they would join the priesthood because they're like, I just can't do anything.
Yeah.
So that was not uncommon. Anyway, okay, so we're kind of caught up on what happened a little bit before with the actual facts of what happened.
Yes.
Because I am going in descending order of proof. Okay. Like, so that's... So once Luciani became Pope John Paul I, he could make all the personnel changes he wanted, including replacing Marcinkus as head of the Vatican Bank. He didn't do this, but the idea that he could probably made Marcinkus very nervous. And allegedly, Marcinkus and Calvi were waiting for any sort of retribution from Luciani because they knew that he was suspicious. This is where the conspiracy theories are like, well, now he had the power to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to root out this corruption. Was that enough for these men to want him dead?
So he did some investigating mm-hmm. during his time as like patriarch and cardinal and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was enough that like people knew that he knew about it. Like he wasn't.
So again, it's all very like politicking and like this sort of political intrigue. Like he wasn't like in the papers or anything,
okay. But
he was asking around.
Okay. And obviously it's a network that asking around, it would get back
mm-hmm.
to
Marcinkus. I feel like at that level in the Catholic Church, you don't have as many peers, mm-hmm. you know? So you are probably... And even though, like, yeah, there's probably a lot of bishops out there in the Catholic Church, you know, but that's, you as the head of the Vatican Bank, you have even less peers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got this patriarch who has not a lot of peers. You guys run in the same circles.
Okay.
Basically, you know. So we're actually going to back up a little more.
Okay.
And talk about the political climate of 1970s Italy.
All right.
Yeah. Because this is important for how the conspiracy theories sort of form.
Mm-hmm.
So from the late 60s to the early 80s, Italy was in a time of huge political upheaval where the far right and far left were both committing acts of terrorism.
Love it.
This was known, and I think is so badass, as the Years of Lead.
Wow.
Yeah. Guns.
It is kind of a cool name. I wish there wasn't any terrorism. But...
yeah, but like, of course, I feel like Italy has the drama to like be like, it's the Years of Lead.
Agreed.
There were a few famous deaths of political figures, all of which spawned conspiracy. Did you know that this is all about saying words correctly?
Like, it's very difficult.
Again, we were up really late last night. So these famous deaths of political figures all spawned conspiracy theories of their own due to the chaotic nature of the Years of Lead. So when Pope John Paul I died, this same climate led many people to almost immediately believe that something foul happened.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because there were inconsistencies with how the Vatican reported this death, mm-hmm. Which, surprise. They actually originally said that he was found by his personal secretary, John McGee, and not the nun who did actually find him. And people were like, that's suspicious. Though they did come out years later and admit this because they were embarrassed that a nun had entered the Pope's private chamber, which
I was about to say, was taboo. Does it have something to do with the fact that it was a nun?
Yeah, exactly. So, but people point to that. And they also point to the fact that, you know, there was no autopsy in it outside of the knowledge of Vatican law. That seems very suspicious, mm-hmm. right? So later on that year, we're jumping back to now Roberto Calvi, who is the head of Banco Umbriano.
Mm-hmm.
Later that year, a report was published that Banco Umbriano was under investigation for mishandling money and possible fraud. And then in 1981, so 3 years later, Roberto Calvi was convicted of illegal currency dealings,
mm-hmm.
and was sentenced to 4 years in prison, though he never served any of them because
he's rich.
Right. Yeah. It also came to light that Banco Umbriano had more debts than it could pay for, and was actually spending the Vatican's money even on, like, basically the shell game of paying off debts, which is what banks do. Frankly, that's every bank does this.
Yeah.
And it's bad. And so in June of 1982, Banco Umbriano collapsed with over $4 million in debt and no way to pay it back.
Okay.
The next day, Roberto Calvi was discovered dead.
Okay.
He's hanging from a rope. You're not ready. Hanging from a rope with bricks tied to him and a bunch of different notes from international currency, like different money, stuffed into his pockets. Originally, this was ruled a suicide.
This is okay. This, because we, I should note that I was making a face at this.
Yeah.
And this, the face was. It'd
be so much better if we had video, but.
Yeah. The face was suspicion.
It's suspicion. Everybody is making that face. Everybody listening, I guarantee you, is making that face.
Is being like, this is, we're getting shadier and shadier.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so, and I know, like, I'm kind of jumping all over the timeline, but I'm trying to, like, the shady shit.
Yeah.
This is an entertainment podcast. I'm trying to be entertaining. surprise, years later, forensic specialists were like, this was actually most likely an organized crime hit.
Yeah.
Obviously. That's to no one's surprise.
Right?
And Calvi was absolutely notorious for his shady dealings, but still, probably the biggest shady deal he was associated with was the deals he made with Bishop Marcinkus.
Okay.
And like I said, Marcinkus is even on the board of Banco Umbriano's overseas operations.
Mm-hmm.
Though it was unclear what role he actually played on that board. But
I can tell you what role he played. I can tell you where he was on that. And it rhymes with intense friendship.
He was Banco Umbriano's official bottom. I don't know how I missed that in my notes.
Listen, you're welcome for helping you find that.
So even though they had their personal intense Bahamas vacation friendship, Calvi apparently never told the Vatican Bank, who knows if he told Marcinkus, that Banco Umbriano was using their money to pay creditors in Central America and the Caribbean. He was actually paying lenders to try to raise Banco Umbriano's stock prices in a I don't understand high finance.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a problem with this episode. A lot of the high finance is lost to me.
It is made up.
Yeah. But it did not raise the stock prices. He was bad at it. And because he was also very shady, very secretive, it's hard to know what he did exactly with all the Vatican's money. Or how much Marcinkus knew about the dealings, but the headline is used Vatican funds for making money.
Yeah.
One more turn of the screw here with him.
Okay.
And this is where the Freemasons come in.
I forgot about the Freemasons,
that
they were going to come in.
Yeah. So Roberto Calvi had allegedly been a member of P2, which is a far-right Italian sect of the Freemasons.
Okay.
Now, P2 their desire was to return Italy to fascism.
Mm.
Because why not? The trains ran on time. during the years of Lead, P2 was involved in several bombings,
ugh,
as well as a number of political scandals.
Ugh.
Yeah, right. Now, the P2's list of members was secret, so there's no way to definitively prove that Calvi was in there, but it was like pretty, it was like an open secret.
Yeah.
And another person that people are pretty sure was in there was another prominent Italian financial figure, Michele Sindona. You don't need to remember his name for very long. and the two of them banded together to work to make as much money as possible.
Mm, okay.
Now, there's this true crime writer, David Yalop, who wrote a book about this,
mm-hmm,
and claimed that Sindona and Calvi made illegal deposits, made fake foreign companies to launder money, mm-hmm, and regularly manipulated the Italian stock market. In 1971, when the Pope Paul VI appointed Marcinkus as head of the Vatican Bank, that represented a really good opportunity because Sindona was good friends with Marcinkus.
Oh,
okay. It's kind of all coming together, right?
Marcinkus has a type.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Corrupt. and so the writer, David Yalop, claimed that Sindona introduced Marcinkus to Calvi, and Marcinkus agreed to participate in their corrupt financial enterprises. That's a quote. So not long after this alleged meeting, Marcinkus had the Vatican Bank purchase shares of Banco Ambriano.
Okay.
And besides this just making money for the trio, this also aligned the Vatican Bank with organizations like P2.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually the intro for the American Mafia getting, mm-hmm, involved with Marcinkus, allegedly, because it was through the Banco Ambriano cell.
Okay.
And that's how he would later be accused of the counterfeit bond scheme.
Got it.
So, 1972, Albino Luciani started looking into these corrupt financial dealings and was unable to do anything about it, like we said. Yalop, the writer, claims that the trio worried about the future retaliation or consequences from Luciani. And so when he became Pope, they were like, that's when rent's due, you know, like right, we're about to get what's coming to us. But if the Pope were to die, then they would be in the clear,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Yalop concludes that any one of these men could have killed the Pope with poison.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's stop there and digest for a second.
Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If this is true...
Yeah. This episode's worth more than one listen, by the way, because there's just so dense.
There's,
yeah,
so much.
Yeah.
Banco Ambriano still went under.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I suppose that's just... That could just be, like, human folly, but, like, why would you... like go so far out of your way to kill the Pope for fear of retribution when
like
it seems
4
like
years
it,
later
you were gonna fail,
yeah,
you know, like how could you have not seen that?
I guess there's a case to be said for desperation,
and okay,
also like I think a unifying thing of all like high finance crimes is that you're always almost on the brink of everything collapsing when you do this.
Okay.
It's not something you can ever stop.
Got
like
it.
It's you have to keep that wheel turning because what you're doing is you're manipulating the markets and you're manipulating with money you don't actually have.
So it had,
yeah,
worked to this point.
Yeah. It's something that I think you see like Bernie Madoff was this way, in a different way, Enron,
mm-hmm,
like all of these huge financial corruption and collapses were all because, you know, you have to keep feeding the monster and eventually the problem is you're going to fuck up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So that it was this was feeding the monster in order to keep the wheels turning.
That's my assumption. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so like we got the Freemason aspect, you've got Roberto Calvi and Michele Sindona who is also butt buddies with Paul Marcinkus. And those three are like, yeah, let's do it. We now have all the resources because we have the Vatican Bank, which, you know, has a lot of money.
It seems like it
does. they have fancy taste anyway.
Yeah.
That's, and then they're like, oh shit, this Patriarch of Venice is really looking into us and they can't do anything now, but what if he gets some more power, which he did.
Got it.
I mean, in steps, he was cardinal, but then still, especially if Marcinkus is a friend of Pope Paul VI, he's kind of got a big shield there.
And it sounds like, so he got 90 votes. I mean, like, he was a fan favorite.
He was a fan favorite.
Mm-hmm. Being the Pope. So I wonder, too, if the rest of the church, obviously they had a vested interest in removing Marcinkus. It sounds like the majority...
Well, if they were even...
aware?
I think there's, something to be said that maybe some of these cardinals weren't even aware.
But the bishops were aware when... Mm-hmm.
When the sale of that one bank.
Yeah, when the shares happened.
But that affected their diocese specifically. So maybe that's why. Or maybe, you're right. Like the cardinals were like, this is our chance. We know there's corruption. We know this guy is pretty anti that corruption.
Yeah. Well, because my question is like, I feel like you still have to have an inside man in order to make this poison happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if the concern was Alberto getting... Is that the right name?
Albino.
Albino. Mm-hmm. I apologize. It just feels like at this point, so Albino has been like ascending the ladder. Mm-hmm. You would imagine that some of the bishops that were beneath him at this point had also starting ascending the ladder, right? And so like all of these people have a vested interest in removing Marcinkus.
Yes.
But there has to be other players that are in Miss Marcinkus's pocket.
Oh, for sure, right? Because you can't just do that.
So why make Albino Pope?
Mm. Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, the given reason is how friendly he was or whatever, but I imagine he couldn't have been the only friendly cardinal, but maybe. And that's a lot of conspiracy theorists point to maybe Albino, when he was made Pope John Paul I, knew that this was the confirmation for Marcinkus that he's putting a big target on his back now, because he's like, now I have the power to do something. This is when somebody would take me out. And that's why he was like, don't make me Pope. Don't make me Pope.
And then he said, may God forgive you for what you've done to me.
Yeah.
So that is suspicious. So it's like, there has to have been, is there any record of communication between Albino and Marcinkus?
I mean, maybe. I didn't see any or hear any. But it's possible. It's possible. Because I imagine from the way that history makes Albino out to be is that he is the type of man who would be like, hey, Marcinkus, listen, this seems shady. I would love to hear your version of this story.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a world where that happened.
Yeah, but also I could see maybe not, because very quickly Albino came to the conclusion that Pope John the Sixth, Pope Paul the Sixth?
Pope Paul the Sixth.
Pope Paul the Sixth was... potentially aware of this and had a close friendship with Marcinkus, and a blood debt.
Mm-hmm.
And
a blood debt. It's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's
and maybe at that point he must have been increasingly aware, because again, it's a crazy statement to make when you become Pope, to say may God have mercy on your soul.
Yeah. That is a crazy statement.
And also, so he must have been aware that there's violence or something.
Do you want to know what the little conspiracy theorist in the back of my head says, too?
What?
Is that maybe fucking Bishop Marcinkus engineered the whole knife thing in the Philippines with Pope Paul VI to save him, to get, like, this, like, blood debt friendship
thing happening.
Yeah.
I don't think, I like...
There's no evidence to that whatsoever.
There isn't, but I don't think that that's particularly far-fetched, given... the reach of the mafia
and how shady he was to begin with,
and how shady. Like, I don't see that being like completely, or it was just something that happened that he was like, oh, I could definitely take advantage of this. Okay, so far, I'm honestly still kind of low on the scale.
Okay. Well, so let me talk to you a little bit then.
Okay.
About David Yalop's investigation when he was writing this book.
Okay, so right now I'm sitting at like a 4 out of 10.
Okay, okay. You're probably not going to move up, but spoilers. So part of the question is like, how would these men get in the Vatican far enough to poison the Pope?
Okay, this is the information that I need because I'm stuck on the logistics.
Now, allegedly, this is what Yalop claims he did mm-hmm. in his investigation because he's like, I believe that the Vatican security is too lax. Mm. So he claims that what he did is one night he breached the walls of the Vatican carrying a briefcase made specifically to look like a bomb. And he got well into the perimeter before anybody stopped him. Or like nobody even noticed him, I think. Mm-hmm. So he was like, look, this is how easy it is to sneak into the Vatican. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say there were issues with the Yalop's investigation. One, this is not a very traditional research technique.
I can't imagine him not getting fucking arrested.
I'm going to trespass into the Vatican with a briefcase that looks like a bomb.
Yeah. And nobody's going to call the cops?
But I guess, like, if that's, yeah, that carries a lot of weight. But, like, I even was looking shady as fuck, and nobody stopped me.
Yeah.
He's probably white. Yeah. But they're like, a white man. Oh.
That happens.
Yeah. He's probably on the up and up. So his accusations were very vague. And in a review, a New York Times editor said that many of his sources were either nameless or dead. Mm.
Okay. And
it's also so worth noting that at the time, Yalop wasn't an investigative journalist and didn't actually, this was his first foray into true crime.
Okay.
You want to know what he was?
What was he?
A writer for the British soap opera EastEnders.
Okay.
Yep. And he'd actually been fired for pitching overly violent storylines. Now, the Vatican also came out when Yalop's book was published and was like, this is all fiction, because why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
5 years later, another book came out that had, again, I'm just hitting the microphone, that had better sources and was more traditionally researched, and it set out to disprove Yalop's book.
Okay.
Two of the biggest points against Yalop's book that was presented, in my mind anyway, were one, there's only two ways into the Pope's private chambers, and both are guarded day and night. So you can't just waltz in there. You'd have to literally jump from St. Peter's Square several stories into a window
yep.
to like sneak in. Or I guess you could scale the wall or something. And
with my grappling hook gun.
Yeah. Yep. There also, the other thing was they went supposedly the author of this book to an unbiased expert about poisoning. And that expert was like, well, there would be obvious and visual signs of trauma on the body from the poison. Again, when the nuns found him, they said he looked like he died while reading, and it was very serene. They're like, it probably wasn't poison. Okay, that's really everything.
Okay.
So,
I have thoughts.
What are your thoughts?
This is because now my conspiracy theory brain is uh-huh. going. Mm-hmm. And this is my question. If the two entrances to the Pope's chambers mm-hmm. are guarded day and night,
mm-hmm.
why did they let the nun in? If nuns aren't supposed to why did they let the nun in?
Where were the guards stopping her?
So it sounds like maybe It's you said day and night, but I'm thinking
like, is there a shift change? Is there or did the nun be like, hey, I'm really concerned about the Pope, I'm gonna go check on him? Why wouldn't the guard go in?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And like, also, first of all, good on the nun, mm-hmm. but she would know that she's not supposed to be in there, and she did it anyway. So she must have had an extreme concern.
Now some notes about, so they said heart attack, right?
Yeah.
Some things that people find suspicious, and I also find suspicious.
Yeah.
So the nun, so that went and checked on him, and then she went and got another nun, was like, oh my god, come look. Dead Pope, haha, poke. But I assume
it was like that was very science.
Yeah, they're like, poke his eye.
Is he? Are you sure?
Oh my god! One time I worked at a vet office for like a very short period of time, and like I just put this dog in the back, and he was fine. And then I went in there 5 minutes later, and he was dead. And I was like, couldn't really tell, like, are you dead? Or are you sleeping? So I poked his eye. I was like, dead.
Oh my god. Okay.
So.
I did not know this about you. Yeah. But I suppose you had to be sure.
He was just very still. Yeah, like dead dogs are. But anyway, these nuns were also nurses. They were like nurses in charge of the Pope's care. And
okay.
They were very surprised to hear of any heart condition. Now they were giving him anticoagulants, but it was all preventative.
Interesting.
And another thing that I personally find suspicious about it being a heart attack is, again, he was laying there like he just peacefully fell off to sleep while reading a book. That's not how heart attack go.
I don't think that is that suspicious.
Mm.
That is, I have heard similar stories.
Have you? Oh, okay.
I don't.
That was the biggest thing for me. I'm like, a heart attack is a violent thing, is it not?
But it's violent internally, but it's not necessarily like, I think the word like heart cardiac or cardiac arrest,
mm-hmm.
or what is it, myocardial fibrillation or something like that is like the medical term for like a heart attack. But from my understanding, because I've had like conversations with people about like grandparents or different things.
I thought you were going to say I've had heart attacks.
And like, yes, it is violent, but there are things called silent heart attacks where like in your waking life, you just are like,
your heart just is like arresting.
Yes. And you're like, this is kind of like, I don't feel good.
So,
but like I'm chilling.
It's possible that he could have been reading or even have fallen asleep. And while he was asleep,
just died
like his heart could have arrested and he never would have just woken up.
Yeah, because his heart just would have taken damage, and then if it was enough to kill him, I mean, he would have been none the wiser. And
he was in his 60s. I think he was like 60.
Yeah.
Well, hold on, I can do math. He was born in 1912. It's 1978. He was 66.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is like the 70s when like cigarettes are good for you. And like stuff like that. I'm sure that there's components of like his lifestyle that were maybe like not the best, but I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not suspicious about the heart attack. Okay. I am a little suspicious because of the autopsy situation.
Yeah. Which I get, like, no, we don't autopsy the Pope. But I feel like if he died suddenly and without warning, 33 days into his
popification. Yeah.
I feel like break the rules, man.
I feel I feel like I say this, like, I don't know why this has been my thing on the podcast, but I'm like, just take a vial of blood.
Just take it. Take so many things. Just take some blood.
Just take some blood. And I'm like, I don't even know if you could do that, like, 12 hours after somebody has passed away. But, like,
I don't know anything. but I feel
like... This is my first knowledge.
If your blood coagulates, right, when you die.
Yeah.
But maybe not as much if you're on anticoagulants.
I mean, that feels like a stretch.
Because anticoagulants stop coagulating.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like you've got until those are out of your system. I don't know.
But there's no longer a system.
There's no longer a system. What I'm saying is somewhere in that body is some non-coagulated blood.
That you could potentially take. and do some tests and tell us about the poison.
Yeah.
But I would agree that I think that poison would be far more visible than a heart attack would be.
Okay. I could get behind that. There'd be like maybe some.
Unless there is such a thing as a poison that just causes heart failure.
Oh, I will say another thing that I just remembered I didn't put in my notes. So the nun also reported that his fingers were abnormally dark.
Interesting.
That could be blood pooling. He had been, if he had died at 11 o'clock, it'd been 6. No, it'd been 10 hours.
Yeah. Okay, so it'd been 10 hours. You're right. So I guess it could have been. But I suppose, But why not? But if she's on the record saying that, mm-hmm. this is chaos and excessive secrecy. Why not mm-hmm. specifically mention it when you have your Vatican doctor go in there?
Yeah.
Like, why not put it in the, like, put it in the report? Yes, she mm-hmm. said this, just because when you die, sometimes your fingers are black.
Yeah. I think that's, it's exactly chaos and excessive secrecy strikes again.
Yeah.
Maybe if you held a few things less close to the chest,
we wouldn't have these conspiracy theories.
We wouldn't be doing this fucking episode, maybe. Okay, so heart attack aside. Poison aside.
Poison aside.
Everything else.
Well, now that I know this about the fingers.
Tell me about the fingies.
Now that I know about the fingers, now I have questions. Again, I feel like that could be... That's a point in both category. Mm-hmm. For heart attack and for poison.
And poison, yeah.
For me. So I'm going to say 5 out of 10. I'm going to go up one. I think there was a vested interest, but I also think it was such a stupid decision to do. Like, it doesn't
to kill the Pope. Yeah, even saying it is ridiculous. It's a ridiculously stupid thing to say.
And then especially with the logistics of, like, having to have your grappling hook, like, greased and ready to go so that you can scale this wall
mm-hmm.
and get into the chambers. But if it was Marcinkus, he mm-hmm. could just walk in.
He could just walk in. Yeah, he's head of the Vatican Bank. I imagine he had some pool on where he could go in the Vatican City, right?
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't need to scale a wall with a suitcase that looks like a bomb. Well, which I... patently don't believe, by the way, it happened.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Do I think the idea is kind of good? And I think that maybe the only way for us to answer this question is for us to fly to Italy and have a suspicious briefcase and try to walk into.
You're absolutely right. But should we try, like, one after another? Like, you go, then I go? Or should we, from separate sides, just kind of try?
From and see if there's, like,
if we can meet in the middle with our bomb suitcases.
This is not something that we would ever do. On the record.
On the record.
This is a joke.
Listen, and if we buy tickets to Rome, mind your business.
So I think we should do one goes in, and then we just wait to see if they're arrested. Mm-hmm. And then if they're not arrested, we do it again to see if we can repeat the same results.
If one of us gets arrested, does the other one have to bail them out?
I was about to say... We should do this once we find out who's funding this podcast so that we can bail them out. We have there is a portion of the Who's Funding This Podcast budget that is bail money. Because I've decided now that we're investigative journalists.
Apparently you can just say it.
Apparently you can just do it.
Yeah.
And if you can afford it.
I think that was the funniest thing is I'm reading, like, because for a lot of, everybody points to Yallop's book. So I'm reading all this stuff about Yallop and Yallop's book.
Yeah.
And then I get to this point, they're like, but actually he wasn't really an investigative journalist. He wrote for a soap opera. And they actually, how, do you know how crazy your storylines have to be that you get fired from a soap opera for them being too violent and crazy?
Yeah, that makes me feel like that man, I feel like we should actually do more investigation on that man.
On that man, yeah.
Is he dead? I don't know.
I don't know. I will say that they have started the steps of making Pope John Paul I a saint. So that's how some of this started to come back to light the last few years, is because also the Catholic Church is vehemently trying to deny that there was any shady conspiracy involved in his death, because they're trying to do this whole sanctification thing.
Sanctification? I want us to make a t-shirt that's like it's called the pulpus, and it's like the picture of a tadpole,
uh-huh.
and then like the picture of like the next stage in the tadpole life cycle is popification.
Does it just go to a pope?
And then it goes, and then the last one is the frog, and that's sanctification.
That would be so funny, and like one person would buy that shirt. I'm sure.
It's too...
And it's me.
This is why I'm not in the t-shirt making business. Too niche t-shirt. Okay.
So you're saying 5 out of 10 total with...
I'm going to say 4 out of 10. I'm going to say it's not going up.
Okay. So I think, what's really just seductive about this conspiracy theory is that there is actual conspiracy that's proven that's in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was actual like court cases brought up about Blanco Umbriano, about Marcinkus's role with the Vatican Bank, all of that with corruption and fraud. So the fact that all of that's there, plus they have this political upheaval, and Roberto Calvi is part of this far right sect of the Freemasons,
and obviously involved with, like, P2 in and of itself is a very dangerous organization. Mm-hmm. He's got ties to the mafia, who yep. obviously killed him.
It's
so there's vested interest in him to fucking do anything he can.
Yeah, it's like
bank going.
Yeah, it's blacking out our conspiracy theory bingo card. Like, we've got Freemasons, we've got the mafia, we've got the Catholic Church, we've got a suspicious death. Man,
that makes me want to go back up to 5 out of 10. I'm really only just stuck on, like, the logistics part of it.
Well, and yeah, so I think if the question is, if given the opportunity, would these men kill the Pope to save their financial endeavors? Probably.
Yeah.
If they thought they could get away with it, they seem like the type of people who would do it.
Yeah, I mean, and especially if, like, I get, like, if there wasn't, like, a noted heart condition. Like, if his nun nurses were, like, this is the other t-shirt, where mm-hmm. it's, like, nun nurse.
Yep.
it's the same t-shirt.
It's just, yeah.
okay.
Which sexy outfit do you wear as a nun nurse? Are you a sexy nun or sexy nurse?
Well, they have, like, that, like, smock thing, right, that they yeah. wear, that goes over, that's, like, white, and it has, like, a red cross on it.
Yeah, I assume. I don't know.
I think I've seen that, perhaps, in the period like, piece.
I don't know, in the Exorcist movies, but is that anything?
is that where we're going? Oh, man. Okay, what's your rating?
Oh, my God. So, I struggle, because, again, like, if they believed that they could get away with it and they had the means to do it, I think they would. However, I don't think there's enough evidence to support that it happened.
Yeah.
I think that there's just, you get to all of this, like, this fraud did happen. He, on the other side, Pope John Paul I was aware of it, couldn't do anything about it until he became Pope. However, we're not meeting in the middle with any facts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that until I were to see more facts, I'm going to say 5 out of 10.
I think that is fair, because you're right. Like, I think that money has for always been, like, money is a reason people kill people.
Yeah.
Right? So you're telling me that there's all this money stuff going on, and the mafia kills people. They killed somebody who was potentially involved mm-hmm. in all of this. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it falls into place in a certain way, but at the same time, because of chaos and excessive secrecy, mm-hmm. there's no way for us to know for sure.
Yep.
Had they done a legitimate investigation immediately with a proper autopsy,
I think a proper autopsy could have answered all of these questions.
Yeah,
truly.
But then now we don't have that. How did Marcinkus come to an end, if at all?
He died. Yeah, he actually was fine.
And so he just lived his life.
He retired. Died. Yeah, he. I think he retired and he stepped down, but he still had money. Yeah, the mafia didn't kill him. So he made it out fine. I don't know about the third guy either, the Sindona character.
So maybe they were taking advantage of the Bongo guy.
Maybe it's possible.
And then,
or it's possible the other way around. Roberto Calvi was misusing their funds without telling them,
mm-hmm.
and that came to light. And
maybe Marcinkus saved himself by selling him out to the mafia.
Mm.
Maybe Marcinkus really is a mastermind and had Calvi kill the Pope,
mm-hmm.
made a bunch of money, sold him out a couple of years ago when shit started to go south. He's out of the way, so now there's no. So he's the only one who knows. And then nobody ever asked him any fucking questions, apparently.
It could be. Again, this is how conspiracy theories go. Like, we're like, and if that's true...
if 2 + 2 = 5, then...
yeah. But no, I say it's honestly a coin toss on this one. I would not be shocked if evidence came out that said it did happen, or I would not be shocked if some definitive proof came out saying that it didn't happen. But it would be hard for any definitive proof to happen because they embalmed the Pope and it was, you know, in 1978.
I wonder, like, also the sanctification of him, like, because they want to, like, clear up any... The church seemed to have really liked him.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're, like, them being like, we just want to make sure that everybody knows that he wasn't murdered. Well, yeah, he was the victim. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Also, a lot of saints died very violently.
I'm saying, yeah, like, would that not
then
make him more of, like, a martyr sort of situation, which I think we like for saints?
Which seems to be, like, a theme for saints. So wouldn't that, in a roundabout way, prove that he was murdered?
I think it's, yeah, it goes back to, like, a consistent issue with the Catholic Church is their desire to save face in the way that they end up actually just hurting themselves in the process. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's it. That's the densest episode we've had so far.
This is one to think about.
For yeah, sure. I almost was like, I can't do this because there's so much information. But I was like, no, this is actually the most interesting one that I've brought.
Yeah.
Because it does have actual conspiracy that's been proven in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of everything else around it. They'll like start to lose a little bit.
Was this connected or was this just like a sketchy time and this thing just happened to occur?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's it. That's the suspicious death of Pope John Paul I.
Final rankings.
Mm-hmm.
5 out of 10.
5 out of 10.
5 out of 10.
5 out of 10 for sure. You guys let us know your rankings. You can comment on our social media at Who's Funding This Podcast. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on TikTok, I believe. Yeah.
Kind of.
We're
on TikTok as of the airing of this episode.
We're on it.
But does it work properly?
And you can also email us at whosfundingthispodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your own conspiracy theories too. What is something you would love for us to cover? We'll do it.
Yeah.
We're whores for subject matter.
It's true. We're also whores for money. So if you would like to fund this podcast,
you can also email us at whosfundingthispodcast@gmail.com.
Nope. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Yeah.
Definitely re-listen to this one and give us your thoughts. This one was one to chew on.
This is definitely one that, like, and we're not even saying that to get more listens. We are, but it's something that I feel like you need to listen to twice
to get all of the pieces.
Just so much of it.
Yeah.
If you're like me and your mind is a sieve, some of it fell through. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next Wednesday.
See you next Wednesday. Bye.
Bye.